Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We're here at the Big Apple Barbecue with the Men Who Dine here for Heritage Radio today. We are here with Scott Roberts of the famous Salt Lick Barbecue in Driftwood, Texas. Good morning, Scott. How are you today?
Good morning. Fine. It's a beautiful day in New York.
It is a beautiful day in New York, and we're so glad to have you here in the city with us. I mean, it's a great, great party.
It is, yeah.
And, you know, Salt Lick is, you know, synonymous with phenomenal, phenomenal barbecue.
Well, thank you very much.
I would like to say authentic barbecue as well.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Salt Lick, about, you know, what you guys, what's the specialty? What is it all about?
Well, my relatives, some of my relatives, migrated to Texas from the southeast between 1830 and 1880. And the Roberts and the Howard family have been in Driftwood, Texas since about 1870. That's where they ultimately ended up. And when, so what it's about is every generation, how you cook the barbecue was handed down from generation to generation. And you know, we go a long way back, and we do a lot of things. We have an open pit at the restaurant, and what that is, that came from the wagon trains. When they would stop, they would, you know, build a fire, put rocks out, put the grills up, and then put an earthen berm to hold the heat and smoke in, and sear the meats, and then move them away from the fire, and then do indirect cooking. And
so that slow off cooking.
Because of the volume we do now, we actually do the searing and the slow cooking, you know, in big rotisserie wood smokers.
Okay.
Using live oak wood. That's all we use. And then after a while, we bring them out and put them on the pits to finish, because that's what they would do, too. They would, once they were ready, then they'd bring them back to the hot end and put the sauce on, and the sauce would caramelize, and also the drippings would fall down and hit the coals and flare up, and that's a different smoke. So that's what we do on the open pits, and they're an integral part to our process. Some people think that they're just there to hold the meat and show, but really, if they weren't there, it wouldn't taste the same, because we wouldn't get that caramelization. And we get that caramelization because our sauce was actually started in the southeast.
Okay.
So it's a southeastern barbecue sauce, and it doesn't have tomatoes in it. But over
It's a vinegar based.
Vinegar and
spice.
And but over the years, it's been every generation tweaks a little bit, and so it's been black wine. It took on the characters of what was around it, and so I'm sure when it left South Carolina, it didn't have like cayenne pepper or chili dulce or cominos, and so it's been, as I say, texified over the years because it picked up those things. And then my mother, she was actually, my father met my mother in Hawaii during World War II.
Okay.
And her tweak to it was to is the way we process it, and she added powdered ginger to it.
Oh, okay.
And people say, "Well, what are you going to do?" And my answer is nothing. It's not broke. It's not. I'm not going to fix
leave
anything.
Alone.
Yeah.
Leave it alone.
The only thing I do is build parking lots.
And you're actually well known for tasting so many sauces. How many sauces have you tasted over your career?
That's a little bit. I don't know where that came from in the bio, because really I haven't tasted that many sauces and all that other stuff. But I, you know, I'm sure it's in the hundreds.
Okay.
Yeah. So not 3,000.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So this is Texas barbecue. What you're doing is Texas barbecue.
I believe so. You know, there's been so many migrations to Texas over the years.
Sure.
And each one of them brought a different way to do it. So, you know, what is original Texas? Well, you know, I think ours is, because, you know, as my father said, the closed smokers came after the open pits, because they didn't have bumper hitches on the back of wagon trains. The wagons. So I don't know. You know, that's just what we really try not to do, is get involved in who's more authentic and who's the best. You know, like when you say best, you're talking subjective.
Absolutely.
And so then, if that's true, then what's the population? 250 million? That means there's 250 million best places. And so
absolutely.
The only thing that we have control over is how you feel when you leave our place, and that's what we work on.
So is there a particular cut that you would say is a signature?
We use briskets.
Okay,
beef briskets. We use the natural fall rib, spare rib. We use the full spare rib. And we do turkey breast now and chickens and a beef and pork sausage is what we have. My father wouldn't cook chicken or poultry, no. He would be turning, he's probably turning over in his grave knowing that there are chickens going across his pit.
And speaking of chicken and meat, where do you source your meat from?
You know, he grew up, he was born and raised on the ranch there.
Yep.
And so he grew up, and his mother, my grandmother, had chickens, and he didn't like chicken because he said he saw what they ate.
Yes. We're not going to go there, but I got you. I got you on that one.
We get the gist on that.
So what's this about the wine now? What are you guys doing with wine?
Well, like I said, my great-grandmother homesteaded a place about 3 miles down the road from us in the 1870s.
Okay.
And they came from the Southeast. They were cotton farmers, and how they ended up in the hill country, you know, growing cotton, I don't know. They turned down lots of places in Dallas. They, you know, they trekked from the coast to Dallas and then back down and ended up in the hill country, but they were cotton farmers. So she had a cotton field over there. And then in 1902, my grandparents bought the place where the Salt Lick is, and it was actually a cotton field.
Okay.
So it's that field has been in agricultural production by the Robertses since 1902. And wine is just the last crop we planted. Well, I hope the last, you know, one will do. Actually, no one remembers, but I have 750 peach trees the vines are, but I killed every one of them. I can't grow peaches. We do much better with wine. We have the wine guy that I have that helps me. His name is Jay Nett, and he actually ran an Italian restaurant in Austin called Mezzaluna, and that's where Susie and I, my wife, learned how to drink wine. And so the other thing about, we live in Driftwood. There's no town of Driftwood. It's never been incorporated. It's a stretch of Onion Creek. And
okay.
What happens at this creek, the creek starts doing switchbacks for about 4 miles where we're at. And the floods come down.
Yep.
And the switchback slows the water down. So it was notorious for the driftwood building up. And people would come to this stretch of creek and get their firewood in their wagons from all over. So this stretch of 4 miles is known as the driftwood. But what the creek was doing also was depositing dirt. A normal hill country ranch probably has 3 inches of topsoil.
Okay.
In some of our vineyards sit on 18 feet of soil before you hit the fractured limestone.
Wow.
And so they like that, you know, they have a place to put their roots down to grow before they send the deep ones down into the limestone.
Interesting.
And we sit on, I think they call them switchbacks. It's where you can actually see the roundness of where the dirt is. It's a semicircle.
Okay.
So the creek used to make a little switchback there, and then it found a hole in the limestone and moved.
And moved.
Yeah. So it's a little further down, but it left all that soil there. And on our 600 acres, we're on a peninsula. We're on a big switchback, and then we had this other small one. And we probably average on the 600 acres 6-7 feet of soil, which is unheard of.
It's unbelievable.
And we sent it to Jay. He's from Northern California. So he sent the soil to the Sagacio Vineyards. We do barbecues with him every once in a while. And they tested it and called him back and told him that soil that he had was better than 99% of the soil in California for growing grapes. And da-da-da-da this. And he said, you know, his chest started swelling out. And then there was that pregnant pause. But you don't have our climate.
Right.
So we didn't plant their grapes.
Sure.
So we don't have Pinots or Chardonnays and stuff like this. We only have red wines at the moment.
Yep.
We're probably going to plant Trebbiano. So
okay.
What we ended up doing is planting grapes from around the Mediterranean. That like hot weather.
Like hot weather. Hot,
yeah,
dry
and
weather.
So,
yeah.
And they do fantastic. The Mavedra that we planted, we planted them, they look like pencil stalks. And we planted them during this gigantic drought we're having. They still loved it so much that we had to trim fruit off of them in the first year, you know, like 4 months after we planted them.
That's incredible.
Yeah, to keep them from killing themselves. And so, you know, and when it's really hot out there, you can just actually feel the grapes loving the heat and it makes the flavor. And the amazing thing to me is I thought that the heat would produce, you know, big-bodied wines, you know, and more like Amarone and stuff like this.
Right.
And it doesn't. It produces very light and fruity wines, and those are amazing. We're specializing in Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre, Tempranillo does extremely well, and Sangiovese. And we're, like I said, we're going to plant some Trebbiano, I think. But our ultimate wine will be a GSM, a Chateauneuf du Pape, I think. But when we get it right, we're going to call it Chateauneuf du Tejas, which I think would translate as friendly house.
That's nice.
So that's incredible. That's, I mean, you know, what like a an interesting diversion from, you know, the barbecue.
Yeah, it's just because, you know, my wife and I like wine, and Jay was out of his job, and I'd killed all the peach trees.
So it all worked out well.
Yeah. What's the reaction in Texas to barbecue and wine as a pairing?
Well, some traditionalists, you know, think that shouldn't happen. So.
Gotcha.
Some don't, but most of the people really enjoy it because where we're located is also, the Salt Lake itself is located, and there's a long strand of gigantic oak trees, and we're in those oak trees, and those oak trees are there in this one long line because that used to be where the fence was, and so there was the fence line, that's where all the trees grew, and so it's there, so people, they walk from my daughter's Salt Lake cellars into the restaurant, and it's landscaped, and they play bocce ball, and she built a big deck underneath a gigantic oak tree.
Yes.
People love to sit there, and then so I built two wood-fired ovens right beside it. And we're ultimately going to turn that into a little different, you know, a wood-fired restaurant.
And we got to visit. The men and dine have to come
out. We're going
to
do barbecued shrimp, barbecued oysters. We'll do, you know, different kind of local produce dishes, and I think we're ultimately going to have to make pizzas, but I didn't want to, but everybody's been asking. And then the other thing I want to do is bake bread on Tuesdays, and then it'll be breads to be available. And so my chefs were all going, you know, cooks and everything like this. They're, oh, well, great, you know, we want to try that. And I said, well, it's good, but you know, like, we'd like to do everything from scratch. And they went, yeah, well, that's no problem, you know, we'll make the dough and everything. I said, no, I'm going to put in a deal to grind the flour, and you're going to buy grain and grind flour. And it's like, oh.
We were on board until we heard that.
Yeah, like, oh, so who's going to turn the grinding thing? And that's, you're going to get a motor? And I went, no. So they're going to start a fund to buy a donkey. But
sounds like there'll be some cardio going on at work.
But that'll be, you know, years.
Yeah,
it'll take a little while.
Well, it's great that you're enjoying your property and you're exploring all these great.
Now, when I was a kid in 1960s, you know, being in high school, I didn't really enjoy the restaurant business.
And so, pitmaster, winemaker, and now you have your cookbook. Can you tell us about that, please?
Yeah, it was, you know, the family's been in Texas for so long. And I grew up on the ranch, and my father was building bridges, so he traveled a whole lot. So I actually grew up with my grandmother. And she was born in the 1800s, and she had a garden, and she cooked. So that's where, and then, so there was lots of stories of growing up on the ranch and the family stuff. And so the cookbook is really a history book. I tell people that it's a culinary journey through time and space, because they started in South Carolina and came to Texas, and over the years all these things were done. So I've, you know, it's always been in my head, and so I've met this lady named Jessica Dupuis, and she's a writer, and so I started talking, and she started writing, and now we have a 400-page cookbook.
Fantastic.
That goes from my great-grandmother all the way up to my daughter.
Well, it says something about you and your product and your company that you give ode and respect to your family's legacy, right?
Yeah, and my daughter is going to, she wants to take over the business.
Oh.
And she's already got a company called Third Generation Foods.
Love it.
Stuff like that.
That's great.
She's, her signature dish was a grilled cheese brisket sandwich.
Wow. Mm.
Cheese, goat cheese. But it was very good. It was very good.
Let us know if you need taste testers.
It's in the cookbook.
Oh, good. Okay. She made the book, so that's important.
Well, and the reason the Salt Lake is there is, you like to talk about family and stuff. Is the reason the Salt Lake is there is because my father just wanted to be where he grew up. And the bridge business required him to leave on Sunday night, and he didn't get back to Friday night. And so one day he just quit. And my mother was following him in the house saying, "Thurman, you can't do that." And he said, "Yes, I can." He picked up the phone and called him. That was his last job. And so then they got this big yellow legal pad and sat down at the kitchen table, and they wrote down 54 things that we could do as a family, and he could stay in Driftwood. And the Salt Lake was the 14th thing on the list, I believe. I wish I had the list, but it got lost.
Right.
And then so one day he took me and he had me and another guy meet him down in the pasture where the Salt Lake is. And then he got out of his truck, and he walked over, and he made a mark in the ground with the heel of his boot. And then he went back to his truck and got his barbecue fork and then made another mark. And so that's the size of the pit. The pit was sized for him to reach the middle. And then me and Loopy went out on the place and got rocks and sand and gravel from the creek, and we built the first pit. And then we cut all the underbrush down out from underneath the big trees and laid the fence down, and he would go down there in the with a cot and a table and his meat and cook and sleep in the cot and sell to people coming up and down the road. And then he put a picnic table there, and then that's when it started. And now then, and we built everything around that original pit using rocks off the place. And now then we have two buildings and a commissary there and a rock patio. And technically, when we open everything up, we seat over 800 people.
That is remarkable.
We serve, on the average, around 3,000 people every Saturday.
So it's a busy place.
Yeah.
That's a busy place.
Yeah, and so, you know, someone asked me, what's the biggest challenge? And the moment's feeding 4,000 people, you know, and maintaining the quality at the same time, which I think we do. Every once in a while, when you have that big groups, you know, I'm sure, you know, we make little mistakes, but if you're there and you ever get anything that you don't like, all you need to do is tell the server, and they'll just keep bringing it back till you get it right.
You get it right. That's true.
Actually,
quality control.
That's the family style that we had was got started the same way. When it was a little small place, we didn't have that, and my father, you'd buy a plate, and then he'd come to the table and ask you, do you need anything, would you like anything more? And he'd say, well, I'd like a little more brisket. He'd give you a little more brisket or a little more sausage. And then we started getting so busy that he couldn't do that. So that's how he came up with the idea of putting everything in bowls and platters, and then you just send it back until you got everything you wanted.
That's fantastic.
So it really didn't start as an all-you-can-eat thing. It started as a make-them-smile thing.
Which is what it's all about.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, food is the big equalizer.
Yeah, and the Hill Country is noted for friendliness. And, you know, the whole state gets its name from Tejas, which means friendly. But it was a big deal in the Hill Country because it was a real hard scrabble country. And so you did a lot of make do. And if you had something and your neighbor didn't, well, you shared it with
them. You shared.
Yeah. And so that's where it all comes from.
Well, that's really great.
And then pride in what they did. They all, you know, tried to do better than their neighbors. You know, because I try to stay away from that best stuff, but that's really what they did.
Right. No, sure. Absolutely.
I guess it's about doing the best you can, right,
yeah,
with what you got. So.
We try to.
And it sounds like you're doing an amazing job at it.
Well, you have a responsibility.
Hold up that family name, right?
Yeah, the family, and there's a lot of, you know, people that work for us, too. Like, Carmen Gonzalez has been working for us for 38 years. And his son, he's even older than me, so he's kind of moving over to the side, and his eldest son is now second on the pits, and his youngest son is third on the pits.
So this is a real long family business with an extended family.
It's an extended family. It's more than just the Robertses. And then, you know, and then I met this, where'd she go? This North Carolina woman named Miriam, and so she's part of the family now, too.
You know what? It's a great story. You know, you guys are really living the life and living, you know, the...
Actually, to tell you the truth, this is a secret. Miriam is actually the pit master.
Is she?
Yeah, because if you don't do her things her way, she'd let you know.
She'd let you know. Well, listen, we're so glad that you're here in New York.
Yeah,
again, it's a great place. And, you know, after all this talking, all I want to do is eat some Salt Lake food. Because I'm starving.
All right.
Thank you for the serving, love it.
So, you know, Men Who Dine and Heritage Radio Network, thank you so much.
Yeah, and I had a great apple this morning.
Great.
There you go.
Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 organization with over 30 weekly podcasts. Visit our website for more information or connect with us on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram, iTunes, or Stitcher for more. Thanks for listening.